Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5.
Patriots Playbook.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the
2007
NFL season.
Zach Guts Combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday after the Patriots knock off Buffalo 38-7. We welcome you once again inside the Playbook. My name is John Rook. Web radio at patriots.com. Same email address as the PFW in Progress Boys. Web radio at patriots.com. And the telephone number open and available for your phone calls as well at 508-543-7482. Again, it's 508-543-7482. A little later on in the program, we'll hear from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick. We'll get you caught up to date on all things Patriot here with the team. Of course, Tuesday's normally an off day, and that's what the team is taking care of today. Brian Lowe from Patriots Today will join us as well. In the second hour of the program, we want to spend some time getting to your emails today, get you caught up on some of the news and notes from the weekend. We're a bunch of emails left over from PFW that we will get to here on the program. So if you haven't had your question answered that you were hoping to have answered today, we'll get to it. If you have other things on your mind that come across during the course of the program and you have questions or you need clarification, this is the place to get it. And we can certainly offer an opinion or two or three, which is what we've been known to do from time to time. And we're glad to share it with you. And if you have your own opinions, we're always glad to hear from you on your opinions. I realize that there's still a great deal of, I don't know if I can really find the correct adjective for this, but I know that there's a great deal of joy in Patriot land over the fact that the team has been rather dominant in winning their three games thus far. All of the, you know, Spygate thing aside over the last couple of weeks, fact is that this is still a pretty good football team. I don't think anybody really deep down believes that any sort of transgressions really helped the Patriots win anything this year. It may be too tough a call to wonder about over the last couple of years, given on the situation and the particular circumstance and when they might have done what and all that stuff. But that's water under the bridge. It's for the NFL to perhaps investigate. I don't think there's any blatant quote-unquote cheating going on. I think all this is basically gamesmanship and trying to stay a full, if not a step and a half ahead of your competition. All's fair in love and war, or love and football, as the case may be. Even so, while that's kind of been put on the back burner for now, I think it's going to be one of those stories that'll continue to sort of lurk there and kind of sit there. And, you know, if the Patriots continue to have resounding success, which they have had now, again, for the first 3 weeks of the season, it's still going to come up. And people are still going to go wink, wink, nudge, nudge, know what I mean? And especially fans of other teams that the Patriots are playing or that the Patriots have vanquished, you're going to find them specifically bringing it up more and more often. I'm just trying to prepare you for what's going to happen, kids. It may already be happening in your neck of the woods, wherever you may be. And so I guess to the point here is that at some point, at some stage of this conversation, it's going to be, God, do we have to bring that up again? You may have already asked that yourself by the mere mention of it here on this program today. It's a subject that's not going to go away. And the only way you can sufficiently snuff the life out of something like that is by continuing to do what you did this past Sunday. I think Buffalo is probably as overmatched a team as the Patriots may play this year. I don't think that that means that it's going to go downhill from here. But if there was ever a game in which one of my favorite savings could have occurred, hang half a hundred on your opponent, if there was ever a game in which the Patriots could have done that, it would have been this last Sunday. Now, I think part of the reason that you saw them call off the dogs late in the game is because, hey, this is a divisional opponent. This, you know, the Bills, for better or for worse, the Bills are family. They reside in the same neighborhood as we do. And knowing full well that you've got to play them again and you will face them again and you've got to play them at their place later this season, you don't want to do anything that'll just flat out tick them off. It's not a smart move to do. You don't want to rub the dog's nose in his own you-know-what. You just don't. It's not a smart move to make when you got to face somebody again. And so I think that's why the dogs were called off. I think it's one of the reasons why field goals weren't kicked. It's one of the reasons why you have the ball deep in the end zone and or deep in the red zone, and you don't, you know, allow Matt Cassel when he gets into the game to throw a pass. And I think those are all valid reasons, and I don't disagree with that premise, even though there's part of me that would like to see a championship team put your foot on the neck of the opponent and then just step down hard. I think that's the mark of a true champion, the ability to put somebody away, deal the death blow. But I think the Patriots also realize that, you know, they should have a little compassion about themselves at this early stage of the season, because you just don't know if you have a real stinker, somebody could end up doing that to you. I don't know how you feel about the Vince Wilfork hit on J.P. Losman on very early in the, second play of the game. First play of the game. The more I look at the play, the more I have to admit that, you know, with his elbow out, which is with his elbow that is the one that actually knocks into JP's leg to start, with his elbow out, it doesn't look good. And I know that Vince was even quoted as saying, I believe it was yesterday in the locker room, that he expects to hear something from the NFL on that. But that's just from the angle that I've seen mostly. You have to understand, I think, the full context of the play, and I think you probably need an end zone look at this if one exists, because I haven't seen it yet, and to understand where he got pushed from, because I think it's also pretty clear that Vince got pushed. And maybe as he was going down, maybe he realized, well, maybe if I reach out, I can get a piece of the quarterback. That could easily have been part of the equation. Nobody likes to see anybody go down. Do I feel badly for the Bills? Well, no. It's hard to feel badly for somebody who's trying to kick your ass. I mean, so what do? You have to try to kick theirs first. That's the way it is in the NFL. I think if you know a little bit about Vince, it's sort of like the whole. It's sort of like, and I hate to reach and make this comparison, and I'm sure somebody will write me about this or call me about this, but it's almost like the Rodney Harrison situation. I think Rodney was getting a bit of a soft shoe around these parts for his HGH taking and his four-game suspension for a couple of reasons, most notably of which he's a good guy. Those of us who know him and have been around him, who have seen him in the locker room and seen how he carries himself on a day-in and day-out basis, know he's a pretty good guy. But he's all business once he steps on those stripes. All business. Sometimes to the point of extreme. But other than that, he's a good guy. He's well-respected amongst his teammates. He's the kind of guy that you want on your team and that you hate him when he's not on your team. And I think because of that, I think he's gotten some, you know, soft pedaling around here. I think also because of the fact that the Spygate thing happened immediately following his suspension, that it sort of got lost in the headlines. Otherwise, we'd probably still be talking about it on a daily basis. So I think he was the benefactor, you know, of the whole Spygate incident, to be quite honest with you. And because Vince, and here's the stretch that I'm making, because Vince is known as a nice guy, he's a charitable guy, he's soft-spoken. He is so giving. He's done a charity event for the charity that I'm involved with, A Wish Come True, which is based in Rhode Island, grants wishes to children who have life-threatening illnesses. And he's done a couple of events for us as well. I can tell you that there's just very few nicer people that you'll meet in professional sports than a guy like Vince Wilfork. So was there intent? No. But was there a mistake made? Maybe. And I think even Vince will allow for that and realize that rules are rules. And, you know, when your arm is out, even if you're trying to protect yourself, what have you. And in the heat of battle, you might allow for the fact, you know, on your way down, you're thinking, let me see if I can grab the guy. And it just doesn't work out the way that you intend it to. So I wanted to get that off my chest, off the top of the show here, because obviously don't get a chance to talk about that with you on Monday, since we have Patriots Monday here on the Patriots Football Network and Patriots.com Radio. However, that's at least how I kind of look at it. We'll wait and see what the NFL has to say perhaps later this week after things are further reviewed. There's no doubt in my mind that Tom Brady should have his best statistical year ever with the weapons that he has in the passing game. I mean, is it like night and day between this year and last year? Am I lying to anybody here? It's night and day. There's no comparison. I mean, I realize, I think we all thought that something was really going on here when your leading receiver from a year ago is cut before the season starts. I'm talking about Rashay Caldwell, who obviously subsequently landed with Washington. But fact is that, you know, this is just incredibly impressive. Nobody can be happier about it than Tom himself. It certainly opened up, lanes in the running game. I mean, between Maroney and Sammy Morris last week, the Pats ran for 177 yards, which is great production, although the Bills were somewhat porous on rush defense anyway. I think they were giving up 177 per game going into the game on Sunday, and they gave up that average again. So I think the fact of the matter is that all things are clicking. If you really want to nitpick, and this is what I want you to do today, and this is what I want you to consider today for our email question of the day, our email topic of the day. We're going to do nothing but pick nits here. And this is what we do best on this program, and it's what we do a lot of here during the course of the season when things are going well. I mean, when things aren't going well, we have good things to complain about. We have legitimate issues to concern ourselves with and to bring up for topics. And to see if we can't come to some sort of a general consensus or conclusion on a particular part of the football team. We don't really have that going right now when a team is 3-0. They're averaging 38 points per game. You know, they're leading the league in offense. They're amongst the league leaders in defense. You got a quarterback who's, you know, completing almost 80% of his passes. You got a wide receiver who's proving to be almost immortal. I mean, let's face it, they get everything cooking. So what I want you to do is I want you to find, and I almost think I know where you might go. I can almost, I think, predict where you might go in this particular instance. But I want you as an observer, as a fan, as someone who, you know, looks at this football team somewhat analytically, especially if you're a regular to this program or a regular here to Patriots.com radio. And you know what we talk about on the show, and we do a little bit more than just the X's and O's, obviously, but we do get to that here. But what I want you to do is just tell me what stands out. What's your overall negative impression of this team? I want you to come up with the dark lining in the silver cloud. That's what I want you to come up with today. Tell me something that is not all pink roses. I want you to look through the glasses without the rose colors on, okay? And I want you to tell me what you foresee to be potentially a problem. Offensively, defensively, doesn't matter where it is. It could be a player. It could be a scheme. It could be a group. It could be a position. It could be anything. It could be the coaches. It could be the Spygate hangover. It could be trying to reintegrate Rodney Harrison or, you know, Richard Seymour back into the lineup. As ridiculous as that may be, I could see where someone might make that statement. Because you just don't, saying goes in baseball, you don't bleep with a winning streak. So what is it? What is the black lining in an otherwise silver cloud to start this season for the New England Patriots? There's your email question, your email topic of the day, webradio@patriots.com. 508-543-7482. Webradio@patriots.com. Find the dark lining in the silver cloud. Where's the problem area? Where's the problem personnel? What could end up being, shall we say, a liability in this particular instance over the short haul and or the long haul for this team? We're 3 weeks into it. Very little's going wrong. I'm sure that you've got some thoughts on the subject. I will look forward to seeing your emails. In the meantime, let's get to some of the emails left over from PFW. And those of you that had questions to ask, well, then I'll see if I can't answer them for you. This one comes from Iggy in Madrid, who sent one late last week that obviously got left here because it wasn't answered. He says, I couldn't see the Chargers game where there's some kind of Marquise Hill memories. I saw in the NFL highlights Ben Watson pointing his finger to heaven after the first touchdown. I suppose this was kind of homage. But anything official from the team itself or BB, as a diehard Pats fan, I like to think that the team does not forget its Warriors, no matter how much they did contribute. They're wearing a number on the back of their helmet, Iggy. They've got a black circle with a white 91 on it, which is Marquise Hill's number, jersey number. And everybody is wearing that on their helmets. And they're doing that in tribute to Marquise Hill. So there wasn't anything other than a moment of silence that we did before the beginning of the game. And we believe we did the moment of silence the first preseason game, didn't we, Gary? Yeah. Because we also did something for Buck O'Kilroy, who passed away in the offseason. Longtime Patriots scout, GM, and such. And so we kind of did something for both of them. And also for Daryl Stingley, obviously, who passed away right before the season started. So we kind of hit them all at the same time. So to answer your question, yes, they did do something. It just happened in the preseason, and they will continue to wear the number 91 on the back of their helmets. Diane in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Well, she's talking about, internet connections. I've had a very good, solid, steady connection on my end. Problem seems to be related to a mic or a switch that is voice-activated at your end, and it's only switching on when there is a big difference in the voice level after your voice has dropped down and said, anyone monitoring the sound coming from the internet at your end?
That's from Patriots Monday, and we do not carry their commercials on the internet.
Okay, there you go. Diane, I hope that answers your question. She did send this question originally yesterday. I'm happy to answer it for you because we don't have the rebroadcast rights primarily of the commercials from the feed and from the signal from WEEI, which supplies us with the Patriots Monday programming. That's why you hear everything going out during commercial time, and then they come back when they come back from programming. Okay. Christian in Voorheesville, New York. I'm going to have to go look at the map. Where the hell is Voorheesville? Do you know? I don't know either. Guys, love the show, which I've been listening in on the podcast for the past couple of weeks. I'm hoping you'll answer my question today, and I'll get to hear it tomorrow. We'll do the best we can here, Christian. Is there any room in this roster for Troy Brown? Troy is on my list of all-time favorites, favorite Patriots, and I know Belichick loves him too, but really, isn't Welker a younger, faster Brown? What would you imagine Troy's role being if he does come back? Who would get cut to make room for him? Well, we've talked about it just a little bit. We haven't really gotten into it because he's on the PUP, the physically unable to perform list, which means he can't come back until after 6 weeks. He's on the same list that Richard Seymour's on. My guess is that, yes, there is still room for him because he can do so many things. Number one, he can catch passes. Number two, we've seen, obviously, the last few years, he can come in a nickelback situation defensively. Number three, he can still return kicks or punts. So he can play special teams, he can play offense, he can play defense. He's one of those multi-talented guys. And as long as he is healthy enough to do it all, I mean, to me, it saves you a potential roster spot in another facet of your football team because he is so multifaceted. Welker is a younger, faster Brown. Wes Welker will probably still continue to do the majority of the punt returning, although you will see Kevin Falk in there from time to time. But my guess would be that if Welker's really getting the time at receiver, they might give Troy more time returning punts because, you know, receiver has fresher legs that way. I think we've already seen that, you know, Tom Brady will definitely go to Wes Welker. I mean, for all the theatrics and heroics that Randy Moss had this last weekend with the, you know, touchdown passes and the bombs, Welker actually was the leading receiver with six catches against the Bills. So if Troy does come back healthy, he will continue to fulfill in the same role he had when he was here the last couple of years, and that's a little bit of everything. As far as who gets cut to make room for him, well, that's obviously the tough question. I think you could probably look at the when he does have a chance to get put back. And then, by the way, when he comes off the PUP, the Patriots have 2 weeks to decide what to do with him. Have 2 weeks to decide whether or not to activate him. Same thing with Richard Seymour. So they don't really have, I mean, it could be, you could be halfway through the season, week eight, before you have to decide what to do about the roster spot. Take a look at the inactives in the couple of weeks leading up to the Patriots having to make a choice. See what receivers are actually inactive, or see if someone is hurt. That'll probably be your big hint if it doesn't happen beforehand. My guess right off top would probably be Kelly Washington, but, you know, maybe you IR a guy. Who knows? But that's just a guess at this stage of the game. Thomas, okay, after this past Got Mossed game, I think the new item at the Pat store needs to be a Got Moss like Got Milk or I Just Got Mossed t-shirt. And so he sent us, it looks like here, well, yeah, he sent us a copy or at least a drawing of what it would look like. That's pretty good. And, of course, Jabari Greer, I believe, was the one that was quoted, the cornerback for the Buffalo Bills after the game, was quoted after the game in the locker room saying that I just got mossed on a play. It's actually a clever-looking shirt, Thomas. I appreciate that. Nicely done. Got a picture of him over his outstretched with his outstretched hands on the on the touchdown bomb, pulling it in from Tom Brady over the outstretched arm of Jabari Greer. And the top says, I just got, and underneath it has mossed in kind of green, mossy-looking letters. Nice-looking T-shirt. You got to give that a go. Let us know how you make out, Thomas. Jackie, I guess, in Dallas, Texas. Is it true that the reason the Eagles were able to beat up on the Lions is that the Lions players were laughing so much at those Eagle uniforms they couldn't focus on the game? Do you think the Eagles planned it to get a competitive edge? And is Goodell investigating? Wow. Harsh, aren't we? Sports pundits here in Dallas are already talking about the game with the Patriots and how they will be able to see if they measure up to the best. I have no doubt about that. No doubt about that, Jackie. Now, having grown up as a Dallas Cowboy fan myself, because that's I grew up in Fort Worth, so we're basically former neighbors. Most of my family is still right there in Fort Worth, Texas as well, and not terribly far away where they're building the new stadium in Arlington, not far away from. Because the passion for the Dallas Cowboys in Dallas, and I can't wait to talk about this in a couple of weeks. We will. But the passion for the Dallas Cowboys is the closest thing I think we can measure here to the passion that we have in New England for either the Patriots or the Red Sox. It's the closest thing I can put out there to you. I really don't know if there is a passionate relationship between a fandom and a sports team that measures as close to what we see with the Red Sox and the Patriots in New England, other than the Cowboys' passion with their fans in Texas. I mean, you could say the Yankees, but no, you know, Yankee fans are front runners. They love the Yankees because the Yankees win all the time. I'm convinced of that more and more now. Phillies, they're hot and weather fans. I mean, Philadelphia is a passionate city, but you know what? They boo. Just as easily, I don't know. It's not that the Cowboy fans don't boo, but I think Cowboy fans follow the Cowboys. I think they would have just as good a following if the Cowboys stunk, which they rarely do. They have stunk, but most of the fans have stayed with this team and with this program. And now I think they're starting to get it back into gear, and the Cowboys will be a great, great test because of the offense they have. Dallas needs a lot of work defensively, and we'll talk more about that in a couple of weeks. But it doesn't surprise me that the pundits and columnists and talk show hosts in Dallas are already talking about it and can't wait until we can get some of those guests lined up here the week before the game. Thanks, Jackie. Karen in Scituate, Rhode Island says, on Friday, at the end of Mike Felger's interview with Ben Watson and Matt Light, Mike proceeded to use the F word multiple times. It was disgraceful. Someone in the background was criticizing Mike for some of his questions that he asked of the players, and the swearing began. Maybe Mike didn't know his microphone was still on, but it only confirmed what we've been thinking about Felger. He's useless. What was that all about? Gary's answering the phone. I did not hear that, Karen. Wow, I did not hear that. I think sometimes we kind of push the envelope with our choice of language here on the program. I try not to, you know, utter one of George Carlin's seven words you just can't say. But we do push the envelope a lot of things because it is the Internet, and it isn't, you know, broadcast radio, and we're not under the auspices of the Federal Communications Commission when we stream here. Do you know what happened, Gary, with Felger? What happened?
It's true.
It's true. He really did that.
He went to break, and he didn't realize his mic was still on.
See, that's a cardinal sin in radio and in broadcasting. You can't do that. I know people who have lost jobs because of that. I hope that for his sake, 890 ESPN didn't pick that up, but nevertheless.
He's talking about freaking Skype like it's the last excuse me.
See, every once in a while, Karen, it does kind of slip out a little bit. Is this Gino? Gino's in Hawaii. Aloha, Gino.
Hello.
How are you, Gino?
I don't know, from Haverhill.
Oh, from Haverhill? I thought you said Hawaii.
No, I don't.
Gary, what does that say? Oh, I just can't read, Gino. Sorry. I'm blind, right, as well as deaf. What's up, man?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about, you know, how people are saying Pats might go 16-0
yeah,
or whatever. And, yeah, a lot of people are looking at Dallas and, and Indy, probably them losing there. But, you know, when I look at the schedule, I think, in a way, the schedule works in our favor because we only have, like, two road games in a row. And, you know, if it's a tough game against Dallas, for anything, if people believe in the trap game theory, then, you know, we'll probably lose the one that's in Miami that people are not paying attention about. Because, you know, Patriots always play to their competition, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then as I look again, it's like, all right, they play at Indy, and which is going to be huge, of course. And then they have the bye week right after that. They then play at Buffalo.
Right.
So, for anything, maybe it's the Miami game that we might probably lose because we don't play good in Miami anyway.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, I was thinking that very same thing, Gino, during the first quarter of this game on Sunday, because I'm thinking, you know, everybody thought that they would just run roughshod over the Bills, and here they are struggling with what? A divisional opponent.
Yeah.
So, you know, it just doesn't matter how good you are or how bad, you know, your opponent may be when it's in the division and you got to play a team twice. I don't care who they are. It's going to be a difficult thing for you to do to beat them twice. And knowing, as we already know, that it has always been hard for the Patriots to play well in Miami, it's just one of those freaky things of nature that just sometimes happens in sports with matchups and the like. You know what? It wouldn't shock me. It would not shock me out of my shorts to see them, you know, stumble, because I think we all realize that, you know, the team is human no matter how good they may be. And even if they do stumble, I don't think it'll take a whole lot of relative strength away from this football team. I really don't. I think it'll just be a blip on the radar screen. The only way that I think you could see it being problematic is if, you know, there's a significant injury or two where you have to, you know, rely on backups, you know, and those injuries occur during a loss. But, yeah, I definitely think Miami is going to be one of those problem areas, you know, on the schedule, sure.
Yeah, I have another thing real quick about also as I'm looking down the schedule. We also play We play versus Philly, and then at Baltimore, and then versus Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the season, we play again at New York.
Mm-hmm.
And now, let's say we even beat Miami, and then we go straight until when we beat Buffalo, and then we get to those teams. I think it's week 12 or something.
Mm-hmm.
We see Philly. Like, all right, okay, let's say we go undefeated, and then Philly, they might be a team that's actually fighting for something at that point in time, you know? They might be a team that could be fighting for a playoff spot or whatever it is, you know. And I look at the same thing as for Baltimore and Pittsburgh. And then the Patriots may not have something to fight for. It's almost like what happened to the Colts when
right.
the Chargers came in.
No, I understand. I understand where you're going.
And then NY at the end. So it's just like one of those
and
teams
I think,
also could be the ones
sure.
to beat us.
And I think you understand now why there's a lot of scoffing going on over the whole 16-0 thing.
Yeah,
because I think you realize how difficult it's really going to be, because you could be cruising along at 12, 13, 14, and 0 and have your division and maybe even the top seed, you know, in the AFC clinched. And late in the year, it's conceivable that a couple of those teams that they're playing could be fighting for their playoff lives, and they flat out need the game more than you do.
Yeah.
And you might call off the dogs just to make sure that you don't get anybody hurt.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying, you know, because the season is longer than what it was by two games now, over what the Dolphins did in 1972, it's that much more difficult to do what the Dolphins did. Now, you know, we'll start talking about this again if the Patriots get to 9-0 and 10-0. I guarantee it. Or let's say that will be the major topic of conversation if they get through the Indianapolis game undefeated. Okay? There's no doubt in my mind, because as you already pointed out, that's where the off week comes, and that'll be the major topic of conversation during the off week. I can almost guarantee you on that one.
That's when, like, before, like the first half of the season, I could only see them probably losing to Miami, maybe. But after that, if they beat Miami, I think, like, those are other four teams, Philly, Baltimore, and, Pittsburgh and NY. I think those are probably the only teams we could lose to. And
well,
I still say we could do, like, 15-1. Maybe if we have, like, one taste of losing.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, 6-1, half dozen another. I don't know that, you know, I'm not so sure that I'm a proponent of, hey, let's lose one time and get it out of the way. I mean, honestly, you play the game to win.
Yeah.
You might as well win, you know, if you've got a choice in the matter. If they do get by Indy, I would think that beyond that, I think playing Philadelphia here, Philly could be in a position where they might be playing for something. Playing at Baltimore, there's no doubt that they could be playing for something. And then playing Pittsburgh. here. I think that there's no doubt that Pittsburgh might even be in position because they're 3-0 to start. Pittsburgh could be in a position to be playing for, you know, a bye in the opening round. So, you know, who knows? I think each of those four games, the Patriots will probably be facing an opponent that will, you know, be licking their chops and ready to get after it.
Yeah.
Okay, Gino?
All right, yeah, thanks.
Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. If you want to contribute to the program, you can do so here on Patriots Playbook. John Rook in here on a Tuesday. Our email question of the day, in case you're just logging in and checking out the content today, has to do with finding the black lining in an otherwise silver Patriots cloud to the start of this season. Give me a player, a position, a unit, a problem that you see. We're nitpicking here. Love to pick nits after big wins. So we need you to put on your, you know, your microscopic glasses and tell us a problem area that you see either now or potentially that could be developing before all is said and done here over the next couple of weeks with this football team. Put some of your expertise to the test here, and let's see if what you've got to say, you know, measures up. I've got my own thoughts on the particular matter. I mean, it's hard to argue with a team that's 3-0 and rolling, steamrolling over people like they are. But as you know, you can always find something. And so that's our goal today. Let's find that something. What's wrong with the Pats if you can find anything wrong with them? Webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address to send off your answer. Eric from San Francisco. Everyone's talking about how great the Patriots are, and some talking heads are going so far as to project them as undefeated and anoint them as Super Bowl champs, just like talking about a little bit with Gino there. Isn't that a little premature after just three games, including two wins against so-so teams with backup quarterbacks, no less? Well, Eric, shame on you for injecting a little reason into the conversation. Yes, it's a little premature. I would totally agree. If it comes right down to it. But, you know, that doesn't make the show fun. We're trying to have some fun here. Lighten up, Francis. Josh in Arlington, Virginia, says, can someone please explain this call to me? I'm trying to read the – oh, he sent the play-by-play. It says, a quarterback sneak from the three on first down. Why not Morris? We have to complain about something, right? Yeah. Oh, that was when Tom Brady fumbled. Okay. Down deep, and it was ruled a fumble, even though after the Patriots challenged it and they got the ball inside their one and led to another missed call by the officiating crew because Trent Edwards stepped out of bounds. He did. He stepped out of bounds, and the officials blew it. Keep in mind, the reason the official didn't overturn the call is because it was his call to begin with. He's not going to overturn himself. And I guess I didn't realize that until I noticed it on the replay. But there's the referee right back there on the back line looking up at Trent Edwards and not down at his feet like everybody else was doing. So... anyway, quarterback sneak from the three on first down. Well, Josh, here's the thing. You say you're a former PFW emailer of the week. Well, then you're an astute enough fan to know that on occasion, Tom Brady likes to run that sneak. And on occasion, he's able to get 2 and 3 yards at a crack with that sneak because they catch the other side off guard with it. He only calls that if he sees a crease. If someone isn't lined up in the proper spot on a short yarded situation, he'll audible and he'll do it. Obviously, that's what he saw. And if you'll recall where the football was placed after the fumble, it was on about the 3-inch line. So if he wasn't in, if he hadn't fumbled the ball, he was darn close to it. 3 yards is pretty good on a sneak. So, I mean, that's the quarterback's call. I think it's pretty hard to argue with that. Rob says, right now, Brady is on pace to beat Manning's single-season pass touchdown record. Do you guys think he gets it? Well, I realize that it's way early in the process. I know what you're talking about. Gosh, if I really had to project this thing out over 16 games, I'd say no. And the reason is because I think the Patriots like to be more balanced on offense. And so I think they'll give their fair share of carries to Maroney and to Morris and to Heath Evans when you're in short yardage situations, you know, inside like the 5-yard line especially. And you might even see Brady try to sneak it in himself again. So I guess my initial impression and my initial inclination is to say no, he doesn't get it, just because the Patriots have never really been after things like that. Craig in South Carolina. Good day to you, Craig. He says, Pats beat Bengals 37-17. Pats beat the Browns 40-9. So he's going out on a limb and predicting the next two games. He says, get pissed if you want to, guys. Dallas at this point has played against the following quarterbacks. Eli Manning, Trent Green, and Rex, he says, Goldman. These guys are by no means great quarterbacks, yet Dallas ranks 23rd in pass defense. Their total defense is 21st in the league. Our offense will put up at least 30 points on Dallas. We can play ball control or explosive offense. We can control time of possession. That's important as our defense will be fresh. No way Dallas is putting up more than 20 on us. Yes, it's early to tell anything definitively, but we had the second-best scoring defense last year without Adalys Thomas. 16-0 is possible, but not probable. Who cares if we don't win the Super Bowl? I, for one, will not get pissed at Bill if we're 15-0 with home field advantage and Bill sits Brady, Maroney, and other key players against the Giants to help ensure success in the playoffs. I don't understand where you're coming with who cares if we don't win the Super Bowl. I think everybody cares if we don't win the Super Bowl, Craig. But I'm sure he'll come back on that one.
You know, who cares if we sit them if we don't win
the Super Bowl? Oh, if we don't win the Super Bowl. That's true. If we sit them and don't win the Super Bowl, yeah. All right. Thank you. See, I think it's a little scary that you're beginning to understand, Craig. Little scary, Gary. Okay, let's get to... they were talking about... what was the question? A bunch of people emailed questions in about most touchdowns in a season was 22 by Jerry Rice in 87. Is that what they were talking about during PFW?
Yeah, I think they thought Moss would beat that.
Yeah, the record for single-season touchdown catch is 22, Jerry Rice in 87. And will Moss beat that? He's got five, right, through 3 weeks? I think he's got a shot. But, again, sort of like the Peyton Manning touchdown pass record, my initial inclination is to say no, he won't get it. Why? Because the Patriots have always professed to be a somewhat selfless team, not selfish team, and my guess would be they'll try to spread it around. Now, hey, if they're going to, you know, single cover the guy, well, then you're going to throw the ball his direction, and he might have a legitimate shot at it. But my initial inclination is to say no for the same reason. All right, let's see. Here we go. Christy in D.C. I'm thrilled about how the team is looking, and I don't want to be a downer, but I'm just a little concerned. She says a little. I'm a little concerned about our troubles defending in the red zone.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, it hasn't made much of a difference yet because teams haven't been able to crack into the red zone very often. However, once we start facing stronger teams like Dallas and Indy, I think this might become a bit of a problem. Do you have any ideas about what might be going wrong in those red zone situations and how we might shore things up going forward? That's an excellent question, Christy. Excellent question, and I would have to say that would be one area that I would nitpick on, and that is an area that Coach Belichick also addressed as well on Monday. We'll hear from him talk a little bit about that in a little bit here in the program. But, yeah, the opponents are in the Patriots' red zone five times this season. The Patriots have given up five touchdowns in those five trips. Now, five trips is the second least amount in the entire NFL behind Pittsburgh, which I think has given up only three opponents' trips inside their own 20-yard line. But the fact is that opponents have scored five for five touchdowns in those five trips. That's not good. Conversely, Pittsburgh, in their three opponents' trips into the red zone, they've only given up one touchdown in those three trips. You like to keep that touchdown percentage in the red zone to 40% or less, if at all possible. So, I mean, if they had scored two out of five touchdowns, I think that's probably what you're looking for. I think that's an acceptable rate of return on, you know, a team making a trip into your red zone. Five for five is something I'm sure that the Patriots will be working on. So, yes, red zone D. I think that the major key here and what might be going wrong, and this is just off the top of my head without giving it a lot of consideration. I'd love to kind of look at, you know, film and see if, you know, you could pick something out here. But the guess is that in these situations when these teams scored, the Patriots had gotten out to a good-sized lead with one exception, and that was the game against Buffalo. Patriots had a 3-0 lead when Trent Edwards kind of took them by surprise and marched Buffalo 80 yards and took that 7-3 lead at the end of the quarter. It's the only time the Patriots have trailed after a quarter this year thus far. And I think Edwards kind of took them by surprise because I don't think that they were sure that they knew what they were going to get from him. But you notice that they shut him down and shut Buffalo down definitively after that touchdown drive. In fact, they didn't even allow Buffalo to cross into Patriots territory, cross the 50-yard line after halftime. That's how dominant the defense ended up becoming. But the other two games, I think it's because you have a bit of a lead. And I think teams are always going to make adjustments. And they come out and they do it primarily. I know in San Diego's case, they scored their touchdown on their opening drive of the second half, I believe. And then, of course, the Patriots readjust and, you know, just turn out the lights. So I think it's just a question of being able to adjust on the fly a little bit better, trying to make in-drive adjustments as opposed to just in-game or halftime adjustments. I'd say that'd be part of it, Christy. I think you probably need to play some with your personnel packages and make sure that you have the right personnel in the game. I think you need to recognize when a team has something going and see if you can't substitute or create some havoc or, you know, pull some guys in and out or maybe even call a timeout when a team has a drive going in an effort to sort of disrupt them a little bit more. And then when it comes to getting in the red zone, I think that's just plain old want to. I do. I really believe that. I think in the red zone is pure physical desire. I think you have to want to stop the other guy. And maybe they just haven't quite had that edge yet. All right. Brian from Brookings, South Dakota. The Leave Belichick Alone video is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. Tom and Andy and Paul are right. Do you guys think that having Seymour and Harrison back will help in the red zone? Is our red zone defense something to be worried about? Okay. What was the Leave Belichick Alone video? You want to describe that for me?
Something Fred played on Friday.
Oh, okay. Fine. I do think that Seymour and Harrison coming back will help. How can it not when you bring two potential Pro Bowl players back, you know, into the fold? It makes you a deeper, if not stronger, football team. So it could help somewhat. And I don't think that's really, I don't think that's, you know, disrespecting the players that are currently out there getting the job done. You can't argue with the job overall that's being done. I mean, after all, this team is, you know, giving up 35 points in three games. That's not bad. That's better on a per-game average than what they did all of last year, and they set a team record in points per game allowed. So you really don't have a whole lot to argue about, although, you know, as I suggested earlier, we are nitpicking here. We're finding a lot of nits today. Glenn in Augusta, Georgia. I'm at work, so I won't hear your reply until this evening when I listen to the podcast. What is his hard-on with the Patriots? This is the third week in a row the Tuesday morning quarterback has been dedicated to discrediting the Patriots' recent success. Also, I know it's early, but the way this team dominates has a certain 2004 familiarity to it. You know what? I'm going to skip over. Don't erase this one, Garrett, because I haven't seen Easterbrook's column today since I was in the charity office earlier today, so I have not really had a chance to catch up on Mr. Easterbrook's latest diatribe. So let me kind of read through that when we get to a commercial break before B-Lo comes on, and I'll see if I can answer that directly. Mike in Newport says, maybe it isn't that Brady is throwing better. Maybe it's that the improved receivers are running better routes, getting separation, and Brady doesn't have to throw it so far off the receiver, which is what you have to do when they can't get open like last year. Keep up the good work. Mike in Newport. Well, I think that certainly is part of it. I mean, when you consider the caliber of receiver that you have, it stands to reason that they're going to run better routes just because these guys, you know, are considered some of the best in the game. You know, I mean, Dante Stallworth thought to be one of the best in the game last year. Certainly Randy Moss, you know, when he wanted to be. Wes Welker, he's a guy that always burned the Patriots. It was a clear case of, hey, if you can't beat him, make him join you. He was a huge thorn in the Patriots' side when he played for Miami. Let's get this guy on our team. And that's exactly what they went out and did. Getting separation? Absolutely. I think we've seen that Randy Moss still has fuel in his tank. And, yes, Brady doesn't have to throw it so far off the receiver. He just kind of lays it up there, and a guy like Moss just goes and gets it. That's the beauty of it all. This one is from Andy in Morrisville, Vermont, who says, they never showed enough angles when Wilfork hit Lossman. If you look, you'll see Vince is getting his feet pulled out from under him. And I don't believe he did that on purpose. Maybe he should not put out his elbow, but is he supposed to be like, oh, don't touch the quarterback? I told you last week the Bills were going to be in a world of hurt, and I was right. Why do teams stick with guys like Lossman? Remember Rob Johnson? I think it's a practice thing. Oh, he makes all the throws in practice, but game situations are different than practice. And some guys cannot practice or process, he says, fast enough. Therefore, they melt under the speed and pressure of the game, especially against the Patriots. Okay. That's actually a good point, I think, Andy. He is a little like Rob Johnson. You know, they were so anti-Doug Flutie when Flutie was quarterbacking in Buffalo. It was all for Rob Johnson. Rob Johnson gets out there, and Rob Johnson basically doesn't do squat, and his career is over from then on out. All Flutie did was just, you know, win for them, which you'd think would be good enough for most, but it's kind of like, we can't win with Doug Flutie. Well, they couldn't win at all with Rob Johnson either. Maybe there is something to that. Maybe he's a great practice player, and he just can't push it over into games. I think that, you know, when he gets healthy and does get back in there, I think that there will be some scrutiny on him like that. Of course, when they selected J.P. Losman and decided to make him their quarterback of the future, I thought they were silly anyway. I never liked him in college, and I haven't liked him in the pros, and when the Bills picked him, I'm frankly just kind of said, good. Good. Thomas says, where is Troy Brown? He's on the physically unable to perform list. We answered that question a little earlier, Thomas. He'll be eligible to come back after 6 weeks, and my guess is that he will. Makia, I guess, from Roxbury. And this is the dark lining in the silver cloud that we asked for in our question of the day. I have to agree with Bill Belichick that the current dark lining is the red zone defense and the fact that we have not been able to keep an opponent from scoring once they get in the red zone. It seems somewhat uncharacteristic of the Pats. Now, there's a vote for the red zone. So far, it's unanimous, I think, in terms of a problematic area or a dark lining and an otherwise silver cloud to start this season for this football team. Oh, look, I have one new security message from Capital One. Thank you. Or Gary did, and I just deleted it. Thomas writes, how about the potential, why don't you throw me the ball? From Stallworth. Why is it always Moss? That hasn't happened yet. He hasn't said that yet. So how could that be a potential? Well, I guess he's saying maybe the potential for that, but, you know, it hasn't happened yet. So until it does happen, I don't think it does any good to throw it up there to see if it'll stick. He says, my other concern is the secondary. The secondary has not been tested yet. How do you think they'll stand up with T.O. and Chad and Hushmanzada and all those guys that are coming up? Well, that's a good question. It's a very good question, and you're right. I don't think they have been tested yet. They will certainly get tested on Monday night with T.J. Hujimama and Chad Johnson, Ocho Cinco. By the way, I believe it was Johnson that called him T.J. Hujimama. I think that was the quote. Funny stuff.
T.J., who's your mama? Championship.
So between Hushmanzada and Chad Johnson, there's no doubt that the Patriots secondary are going to get a test on Sunday or Monday. The question is, can the Bengals defense stop anybody? Patriots defense should be able to slow down Cincinnati enough. Should be able to slow down Cincinnati enough and outscore Cincinnati, as long as they don't turn the ball over. Because when you turn the ball over on the road especially, then problems magnify themselves because you get the crowd worked up, you get them into it, you know, and it can really snowball on you. More so, it's important to take care of the ball on the road than at home, I believe. It's good to take care of it at all times, but more so on the road, because you just don't want emotion to ever play into the equation. You want to keep the home crowd out of it as best as you can. I also think it'll be very, very important for the Patriots, as long as you brought it up, Thomas, it'll be very important for the Patriots on Monday night to jump on the Bengals and get the home crowd out of it quickly, make the Bengals play from behind, because then the Bengals become more predictable. You know they're going to go over the top. You know they're going to go for Ocho Cinco. You know they're going to go after Who's Your Mama. They're going to do that. Then you can kind of key on it. Then you can double in certain situations. Then you can blitz. Then you can throw different looks. And then, you know, you have a chance to work on some things. I can already see about 38 to 20. Why not pick 38? It seems to be a great number to go with. Although the Bengals defense did give up 51 to the Cleveland Browns. So, honestly, I think the potential for more is there, but I'll say 38 to 20 at this stage of the game. We'll throw in an early prediction for the week. Kenneth comes up with a good one here. Really good one. Thank you, Ken, from Huntington Beach. And by the way, Ken was the winner of our Name the Patriots offense last week. The firing squad. So we have to talk about the Patriots offense about the firing squad around here?
About 38 special.
38 special. Yeah, but see, we don't really have a number 38 on offense.
We scored 38 in three straight games.
Well, that's true.
So the cover of the Herald yesterday.
The 38 special offense? Yeah, that's true. I read the paper online, so I didn't see the back page. Okay. Fair enough. But we got to give Ken his credit here. He says, Patriots problems. Last week, when you were discussing where the first Patriots loss may come in the schedule, I still say Steelers, I mentioned that the number one enemy for the Patriots is complacency. I think that enemy reared its head for the first time during the first half of the game versus Buffalo. With a team this dominant, it's going to be hard to get the players up for trap games. I'd say that's the primary worry about this team. Number two, the Patriots defense has, over the past several years, been a beast in the red zone. Not so much this year. So far this year, opposing teams are 100% for touchdowns once they reach the red zone. That does not bode well as a continuing trend this season. True. And number three, a lot of people are mentioning a weakness in the kicking game. Their concentration is on Gostkowski and his recent misses. I'd also like to point out a couple of poor punts in last week's game. I think Gostkowski will pick it back up, but Hansen is a worry to me. All great points, Ken. Complacency? Sure. That's a natural one, I think, that you'd have to concern yourself with somewhat. I think that's part of the reason why you always do what you can to put that mental edge and that mental chip on your shoulder, and hopefully Spygate helped them somewhat a little bit. Number two, the red zone, which we've discussed already, and you're right there with us on that one. And number three, this I've been waiting for someone to bring this up, because quite frankly, I think, in my own opinion, while the red zone is a problem area, I think it's something that's fixable. Something that may be less fixable right now is the kicking game, and to me, that would have to be the number one problem area right now. If we're going to nitpick here, that's the biggest nit that I'm picking off of my sweater today. Kicking game. And it's not so much weakness, it's inconsistency in the kicking game. Gostkowski, sure. Hansen, absolutely. And legitimately so. And, you know, eventually, now, the one thing Hansen does do, and the reason the Patriots went out and got him in the offseason, because I believe he led the league in punts inside the 20-yard line, inside the opponents of 20-yard line last year. We haven't really had much of an opportunity. I think he's gotten one or two, and I haven't seen the stats this week, so maybe you have them in front of you and you can throw that in there. But I think that when you're playing a field position game, I think that is something that will definitely have to be worked on and looked at. I don't think they so much care about the overall average as his ability to pin a team when you need to pin a team. And I think that because Gostkowski missed that 41-yarder a couple of weeks ago, that honestly, I think that's raised some doubt. And until he can connect, you know, two or three times in a row from 40-plus, I think that sort of, you know, dark cloud is going to hang over his and our heads in terms of a weakness in the kicking game, something that won't go away. Fortunately, it hasn't cost you. What I'm hoping here is that when you have an opportunity to kick one, and they did have an opportunity this last weekend against Buffalo when they were down 7-3 and they went for it on 4th-and-7. You know, and that sort of was a dual-purpose thing. I really don't have a problem with them trying to send a message and showing that they have the confidence enough in their offense to be able to pick up a 4th-and-7. I think it also shows you their ultimate confidence in being able to just win the game even if they fell short, which they did by a yard. But they held the Bills in the ensuing possession. But the next time they faced that situation, you know, and it would have been, what, about a 48-yard field goal, I think, somewhere in that vicinity? I'd like to see them say, all right, you know, let's go ahead and let Gostkowski try it because we need to know what we got out of the guy. Still, we need to know. He accounted of himself very well in his rookie year, I thought. But, you know, we're bringing the question up, and I think that question is going to continue to linger until we see him do it. So I think that's a legitimate concern, and to me it's the number one concern. Wilfork's hit. He says, I don't think Wilfork was aiming to hurt Losman. Unfortunately, it's very hard to say he wasn't aiming right at Losman's knee when you watch the replay. The play is unfortunate for two reasons. One, Losman is injured. Thankfully, it doesn't appear serious. And two, people are practically begging for reasons to make the Patriots look crooked, and this plays right into their hands. Oh, that's absolutely true, Ken. And then as far as the Cincinnati game is concerned, he says, people keep talking about the lack of running in the Patriots' offense, even if they got 177 yards last week. Who's talking about lack of running? Was that brought up during PFW? Nobody that I know is talking about lack of running. I think it's because the passing game has been just so flipping overwhelming. He says, to an extent, the comments are right. I don't see it. The running game has been great, but it's only come on strong once the game is over and points have largely been through passing. Well, frankly, that's fine. You got to have a running game to be able to run the clock down. You can't throw the football all the time. Who cares if the yards you get comes after the game is in hand? That's still part of the game. You have to learn how to play with a lead. Sure, if you're behind the game, you're not going to get any yards running the football. You're going to get all your yards passing the football. Why? Because you're behind. Says, with a high-flying Cincy offense, what do you think the chances are that the Patriots purposely slow the game down, concentrate on the running game, and pull 6, 8, and 10-minute offensive drives or drills? If the game gets tight, the quick-strike passing game is still an option, but I personally see the best way to beat the Bengals is to keep their poor defense on the field and their strong offense off of it. That's a good point by you. I'll give you that one, Ken. That one, I think, resonates. And that makes a lot of sense, and I think you're absolutely right. I think you'll probably see the Patriots try to, you know, mix more of the run in with the pass. But it's kind of like having, you know, the Lamborghini sitting in your driveway. And then you just kind of let it sit there, and you don't like going there and sit in it. And then you feel the leather seats. You know, you put your hands on the steering wheel, and you might even, like, you know, start the car. And you listen to the purr of that motor. And then you kind of, you kind of rev up the engine just a little bit. And you're thinking, man, I'm sitting in a Lamborghini in my driveway. Let's take it for a spin. Come on. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. A little pedal to the metal. Yeah. And that's what you have to do with a passing game. You got Randy Moss sitting in your driveway. No. Wait a second. No, he did not just have a wreck. But you got Randy Moss sitting in your driveway. You're going to have to go to the guy at some point in time. I mean, I see what you're saying here, Ken, but if you got him on your bench or on the field, you're going to throw to the guy. You got to have to throw to the guy. Good email, Ken. Good stuff. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Webradio@patriots.com. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number if you want to contribute to the program. Our email topic, our question of the day, find the black lining in the otherwise silver cloud that is the start of this 3-0 Patriots football season in 2007. Do a little nitpicking. It's a Nitpick Tuesday. Brian Lowe from Page Today will join us in just a couple of moments.
This is pretty much the worst video ever made.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Hunger stands no chance against the new Bacon Lover Supreme Omelette Breakfast Sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. Supreme Omelette Egg with crisp, thicker-cut pepper bacon and Colby Jack cheese. Hurry in today for a whole lot of sizzle, because this irresistible combination of flavor won't be around forever. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Dunkin' Donuts. America runs on Dunkin'. For a chance to win big, visit DunkinDonuts.com today to win great football prizes. Prizes include 42-inch plasma TVs, signed official game balls and JetBlue flights. And don't forget to try a Bacon Lover Supreme Omelette Breakfast Sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. Price and participation may vary. No purchase necessary to enter to win. Offer valid 8/20 to 9/30. Must be 18 years or older to participate. Must be a U.S. citizen. Limited time offer. Visit DunkinDonuts.com for official rules and a chance to win.
Hi, this is Richard Seymour. If you're a big Patriots fan, show your team pride and win great prizes by ordering your Patriot Specialty License Plate. Team Rules says your car has to be registered in Massachusetts to be eligible. When you place your order, you have the chance to win Patriots tickets and memorabilia. Proceeds from the sales of the license plates go to the New England Patriots Charitable Foundation. Now that's worth driving for. To score your new set, apply online or in person at your local RMV or log on to Patriots.com for more details. Show your team spirit, give to a great cause, and get your Patriots license plate today.
We started doing this last week, coming up with old television theme songs on Tuesdays, you know, just to kind of have some fun here on the program, right? So if you can identify this theme song from this, this would have been 80s sitcom? Yeah, early 80s sitcom. If you can identify this sitcom, send us an email, webradio@patriots.com. I think I have this one, Garrett.
You didn't get chips last week, and I put a bag of chips in front of you.
That was bad, wasn't it?
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, that was bad. We welcome in Brian Lowe from Patriots Today.
Hey, this is pretty much the worst video ever made.
It's getting better. Trust me, it's getting better, well, Gary.
Anything that has Christina Acker in it.
How about that, yeah.
Yeah, very good. By the way, when is she going to make her appearance?
Great point. You know, we got to get her in here. We got to get it.
Ooh, next, set that up for next week.
You know what? Next week's a weird one, though.
Oh, how's that?
You know, Monday
oh, because,
night.
Yeah. Because we will only have actually 2 days of the show next week.
Right.
Wednesday and Thursday. Because Patriots Monday will
Let's
be on
aim
Tuesday.
For two
Following
weeks from
week?
Today.
Okay.
2 weeks from today.
Two weeks from today?
Let's aim for that.
She'll make her.
Let me see if she can get it into her schedule.
Right. Because I'm sure she's in high demand.
She is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'll talk to her about that.
So she can make her.
I'll talk to her about that.
Want to touch the hiney?
Let's not use that while she's in, maybe. Maybe we'll. We'll treat her well.
We'll treat her well. Absolutely.
Now we're going into a different stratosphere, huh?
Well, this would be then her radio on Patriots.com radio debut.
I think so, Gary. Has she been on?
She hasn't been on any of the programs.
With the PFW guys?
See,
no.
She'll have to make a radio debut here on the Patriots Football Network.
Best place to be.
Okay.
Sure.
Only in the playbook, right?
Only in the playbook.
That's right.
Gotta love the playbook.
All right, so Before we get back to some emails here, what were some of your impressions for Sunday? I mean, it's kind of hard to really come up with a lot of stuff, although that's what we've been doing today is kind of nitpicking over the 38-7 win.
I mean, this team's red zone defense is disastrous, and it's going to cost them. No, I'm just kidding. It is unbelievable.
Funny, but that's what the majority of the emailers have been saying.
And that's how Bill Belichick's press conference ended yesterday with you would think he was the head coach of an 0-3 team, and that he was on the verge of getting fired if he didn't reverse this red zone trend. He actually said it's ridiculous, and we can't keep playing this way. It's really ridiculous.
It's basically.
I mean, I know where that was from, but it was basically the same thing.
What he said yesterday.
It's really. I mean, that Sunday's game was. It wasn't quite as compelling as these first two games. It was a little different in that the Patriots really did get off to a slow start. You never really had the sense that they were going to lose the game. But they're down 7-3 or 10-7 or whatever. It was 10-7 it was midway through the second quarter. And you're like, wouldn't be a bad idea to start getting into a little groove here. And, Trent Edwards making his NFL debut and just an impossible situation. You knew that that first drive that he conducted, you knew they weren't going to keep that going. When Randy Moss is on the field, as we're seeing through 9 hours of football this year, that's all it's taken. He is just mesmerizing. Mm-hmm. And so, my thoughts on the game, probably not unlike many others. They can do whatever they want offensively, I think, against most teams. I think their defense, we joke about that red zone, but the fact of the matter is if you only allow teams to get into the red zone 5 times over every 3 games, you can let them in all you want. You're still going to win most of your games because if they're not getting into the red zone often they're not scoring from the red zone often. So, hey, there's no real weaknesses on this team. There are some tougher games coming up, at least tougher than the Bills game. I think this week is going to be a little bit of a different sort of intangible going into it with the fact that you're playing such a high-powered offense. Same thing a couple weeks later against Dallas and, of course, a few weeks after that against Indy. But at this point, there's no reason to think that they can't keep this going. It's entertaining to watch. It's different than what we've seen in past years, even when they won a lot of games. So it's compelling football, plain and simple, compelling football.
One of the things that you and I started doing last week as well is kind of taking a look at Christopher Price's column from Metro Boston, which we actually think is a pretty good pretty good column, to be honest with you. And he does 10 things we learned yesterday, issues it out on Monday, talking about the game played the previous day. And we give Chris all the credit in the world because I think it's a clever column. And he actually comes up with some very, very good points. So let's go through some of these because I actually think it kind of hits the nail on the head just about every week and certainly this week. This is number one, Tom Brady could be on his way to a record-setting season. No doubt about that. The record, by the way, in case you were wondering, for a completion percentage in a season is 70.55%. And that was held by? Ken Anderson. Cincinnati Bengals.
Dan Klecko.
No. He did it back in 1982, so it was probably a little before your time.
I was alive, but not
But you were not aware. Yeah,
right.
Okay.
Right.
Through three games, Brady is at 79.5.
It's staggering.
He's going to come
six
down.
Incompletions a game, six.
I don't think he's going to stay as hot as he has been, but you'd have to say that considering the weapons that he has, that he would have a shot at that. He would have, because it would take, you know, the further you go into the season, if he continues at 75% and right around there, the further you go into the season, the more difficult it's going to be to have one really bad game knock you all the way out of it.
It's like when you look at baseball pitchers, you know, they're if their first outing of the year is, you know, one third of an inning and they give up five runs, it's going to take them a while for it to really become a normal ERA and vice versa.
Right.
And I agree, the more he keeps this up, which is it's never happened, this kind of pace. But, yeah, the better chances that that he's going to break that record. And, you know, as good as Brady is, and you've used the word nitpicking in the past, you know, at the top of the show, you know, he's fairly consistent in how many interceptions he has over every year. It's generally a 10 to 1 ratio right now. he's pretty consistently in that 12 to 14 interceptions per year ballpark, I think it is. I don't know if he's ever in his complete seasons been under 12, and I don't think he's ever been over 14 or 15. He's right in that ballpark. Well, right now he has one through three games, so that's on pace for having five or six over the course of the season. Again, I don't know exactly what that record is. I don't think anyone can keep that up, but that's an incredible number as well. Those completion percentage and the interceptions. And the interceptions is something that Brady always talks about. You know, that's something that he likes to keep low. Certainly completion percentage, certainly touchdowns, but he feels that the worst thing he can do is turn the ball over himself. So he always talks about those interceptions. If he keeps that number low, wow, that's a staggering stat.
Another thing we learned on Sunday is that Randy Moss will do one thing each week to make you say, whoa.
He may have the five or six greatest physical catches that I've ever seen.
For a Patriots receiver.
For a Patriots receiver. I mean, the second touchdown that he had against Buffalo was mind-boggling. The way that ball was thrown, the way he caught it. I thought the first touchdown was just as good. Both times, the coverage was exceptional. The coverage maybe couldn't have been better. I think it was Jabari Greer both times. And the ball had to be thrown perfectly, and Moss had to have his hands in perfect position, and both times that's exactly what happened. I thought that first touchdown was overlooked by the second one, but I thought it was just as impressive. And, I mean, we go back to the one against the Jets. Each game he's had two or three where you just say, I've never seen a receiver capable of making that catch.
Another thing we learned on Sunday, the Patriots can stop Aaron Schobel. This one was buried, you know, in the headlines and the offense and everything else that was done. But this is the first time I can remember in recent memory that they did a solid job of neutralizing a true nemesis.
Yeah. What he's averaging in his career about a sack a game
against
the Patriots.
Brady and the Patriots.
It's not,
right.
It's not like he only does it against the Patriots. The guy's a really good pass rushing defensive end, and I think he got in on the only time Brady was sacked, he did have a piece of that. But absolutely going into that game was one of the top storylines was, can the Patriots offensive line keep Brady upright? Hey, remember what happened in the first play of last season when the Buffalo was here, and it wasn't showable, but Brady got knocked down, ball comes loose, and the Bills are up 7-0 10 seconds into the season. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely one of the storylines going into it, sort of overshadowed when the game was done. But you give Matt Light, especially Matt Light, but really the entire offensive line, all season long, a lot of credit because they're not only keeping Brady off the ground, he's been sacked three times once again. It's another stat, sacked once a game. But the offensive line is doing a great job, you know, opening holes for the running game, just giving Brady time.
The offensive line continued a nice stretch of play against the Bills.
There you go. That's exactly it. How about the depth of this offensive line? Three games, three different right guards. I mean, Who does that and wins and has
hardly
plus
ever.
Grades? Shows
For you
your
that that
line.
Versatility is really paying off now.
And they've got every single one of their offensive linemen has been, you know, they're in at least their second year with the team. They had no changes with the exception of a couple of draft picks, none of whom made the team. But all of their starters plus their backups, Ryan O'Callaghan, Russ Hochstein, Billy Yates, Wesley Britt, all these guys have been around for at least
one. Hochstein got the start on
Hochstein
Sunday.
Got the start, and Ryan O'Callaghan has barely played on the offensive line, but he's been in there as an eligible receiver a handful of times, which I think has made a huge difference as well. I don't think you can underestimate this idea of the offensive line cohesion having played together for a while. They've been flawless, and I think there were some questions about that too because they didn't have a flawless preseason, and they sort of had some inconsistencies last year, but they've been dominant this year.
Another thing we learned is that Bill Belichick is not a fan of wacky plays. He didn't really have a whole lot of compliments on the sort of handoff slash lateral from Welker to Moss.
Right. I think he's a fan of aggression, but he's not a fan of anything that could lead to
a mistake after making a gain, especially.
Now I thought in the way that one played out, it almost seemed like Randy Moss was in too perfect a position for it to have been an accident. I almost thought like, well, maybe at the time I'm thinking, well, they didn't design a play this way, obviously, but maybe one of the things they've talked about is, hey, why only use Randy Moss's speed and ability to get yards after the catch only when he catches the ball. Mm-hmm. Maybe they talked in practice about, hey, if a guy like Welker makes a catch and he's running but he's got a couple guys on him, you know, get in position to maybe get the lateral. Didn't seem like that was really what Belichick was asking for. And, you know, even if he made it all the way into the end zone, I think we would have heard the same thing from Belichick. Yeah. Hey,
oh, no
you
doubt.
Know, in that case it worked, but, you know, that wasn't the greatest play I've ever seen.
Absolutely,
you
know, so. No doubt.
fun for the fans to watch. It was fun to see.
It's pretty amazing that he did it. I mean, I don't think anybody realized until Moss was already taken off for the end zone, so to speak, that the ball had even been handed off.
Right, yeah, exactly. And let's face it, it wasn't like this was a game-deciding moment.
No.
As it was, they were going to have first and about goal. I think it was around the 10, maybe it was the 15, but they were going to have first down in the red zone.
Yeah.
You got to figure this
and
out.
Then you don't want to
score anyways.
Right.
So that's probably part of Belichick's thinking, like why risk that? You know, why risk that? You know?
Let's see. Next was, even though it has struggled at times for the first two games, Ellis Hobbs' kick return against the Jets aside, the special teams unit does receive a passing grade for its work against the Bills. You'd have to take a look at Wes Welker's punt returns in particular and say, pretty sharp.
That was big. Those were big for field position. He really excelled. Two of them in a row at the end of the second quarter. And I'll tell you what.
Three returns for 72 yards total against the Bills.
Yeah, and two of them were for a total of about 60 of those yards, and they both led to touchdowns. And, you know, they were going against one of the top special teams units. Brian Moorman, what an exceptional punter he is.
Oh, he's great.
That punt out of the end zone. I mean, obviously, when you're punting, when the ball is inside the 1 yard line, the punter has less room to work with. You got to be a little more cautious. Wow. That punt sent Welker back. That was about a 75, maybe close to 80 yard punt. That was an incredible punt. And, for that to be the game for the Patriots to get on track with their return game was pretty impressive. It really was.
You will hear plenty of talk from the New England defense this week about their inability to stop teams in the red zone.
Yeah.
Probably more from them than we're hearing from the fans already.
Right, and we already have. I mean, it started right after the game. It continued yesterday. And, I personally think that it is in the category of nitpicking. If teams were 12 for 12 or 15 for 15 at this point, that would be one thing. But when your defense is preventing them from getting in the red zone often in the first place, and you let them in sometimes, it's going to happen. You're playing against some pretty good offenses. Case in point, against San Diego, their touchdown, the Lorenzo Neal touchdown, came on fourth and goal from like the one. They stopped them on the first three downs. I mean, it wasn't like the Chargers just had an easy route into the end zone. It was on fourth and goal, and the Patriots had done a pretty good job. So, you know, it's not like they're just cruising in. I mean, against in the Buffalo, that was a bad drive for the Patriots defense, that first quarter drive where it was about a 7-minute drive that went 80 yards, Marshawn Lynch scored. That wasn't this defense's best drive. But it's not like they've been getting in with ease. It's not like they've been getting into the red zone with ease. I'm not too worried about it. I just think that if you're limiting the opportunities that teams get in the red zone, you're going to limit the times that they get into the end zone. So, you know, yeah, they got to work on it, sure. I mean, one of the things that over the years they've been pretty good at is, okay, we're bend but don't break. We give up some yardage, but once they get into that red zone, we prevent them from getting in. I think that'll come into form soon, but not much to worry about. We'll hear a lot about it, but not much to worry about there.
Item number 8 of the 10 things we learned on Sunday about the Patriots. Even the obscure stats favor the Patriots. Now, through 3 games, and this is what Chris Price, again, of Metro Boston News writes, he says, through 3 games, the Patriots have run 198 plays from scrimmage. Excluding kneel downs, that's just plays, 11 of them have gone for negative yardage, which is a little bit of an improvement over last year. Through 3 games last year, they had 13 negative plays, so it's a slight improvement. Mm-hmm. New England has converted an astounding 48.1% of third down opportunities, holding the opposition to only a 36.4 conversion rate. And through 3 games, the Patriots has been flagged for only 12 penalties, one of the lowest marks in the NFL. Ben Watson has been flagged for the most. He's had 2 by himself, a false start and a holding call. Cost his team a total of 15 yards. No one else has more than 1, with the 2 most costly penalties coming on a Hobbs pass interference call in San Diego and a Vince Wilfork roughing the passing call on Sunday. So fact is that the Patriots aren't doing things that could beat you in a close game.
Yeah, that's some great stuff from right there from Chris. And when you're winning 38-14, 38-14, 38-7, most of the stats are going to be in your favor. But you're right. There isn't even that one area where you're like, well, and, I mean, that red zone situation aside, there really isn't this one area where it's glaring. Like, they really, you know, like the penalties, that's a great stat. They're not even hurting themselves that way. And that's when you know things are going smoothly. They also, knock on wood, you know, if right guard is the biggest injury situation that they have all year, then they're doing something else right, or they're being lucky. And, well, you know, I mean, you sometimes can't control that. And we just have to look at the opponent from the other day to see how unlucky you can be in the injury situation. But it's a great point by Chris. There's really, really, and even those nitty-gritty, you got to dig to get them stats, they're doing pretty well.
The next item, you can't help but feel sorry for the Bills.
Well, you know, you're not going to hear, you know, one NFL team be sorry for another one.
Nope.
But it really can't get much worse. I mean, they've lost, you know, they've lost
2 members that are secondary. They've lost a quarterback perhaps for a while, although I don't know. It's not a serious thing. But, I mean,
could that end up being one of those, you know, blessings in disguise?
And they've lost their middle linebacker.
Great rookie. I mean, they did a good job in the draft. Marshawn Lynch, Trent Edwards, who was in an impossible situation but seems like he might have something to show them, and Posluszny. And now Posluszny out for the year. That's a tough break for them. You know, between Coy Wire, Webster, the cornerback, obviously, you know, Kevin Everett. I mean, you know, not a critical part of their team, although I think they counted him as a pretty good special teamer. But, you know, the emotional, you know, investment that they had to make into watching him go down and the aftermath of that. And obviously it seems like that's going in the right direction.
Right.
But, you know, it just they've had some lousy years. They know they're in a division with the Patriots where winning the division is virtually impossible. They knew the Jets were on the way up. We'll see how that plays out. So, you know, all these injuries, knowing going into the year that, you know, you're at a disadvantage because you're in the Patriots division. You feel like through 3 weeks, you feel like it's already over. We got to look to next year. And that's a depressing situation, one that around here we
fortunately don't really have
to worry about. But do you feel bad for the Bills? Hey, it could happen to anyone. So in that case, you just figure, well, you know, it could be us. You feel bad, but, you know, it's the NFL. Those are the breaks.
That's right. No one's going to feel bad for you when it's going wrong for you.
Exactly.
And the 10th and final item here on Chris Price's list of the 10 things we learned on Sunday. It wasn't quite separation Sunday. The Patriots, though, have already started to put some distance between themselves and the rest of the AFC East.
Yeah, well, forget about the AFC. I mean, you almost forget about the AFC East at this point. Someone was going to have to get a win in the AFC East the other day because the Jets played the Dolphins. But short of them playing each other, you don't get the sense that these other 3 teams are going to get too many wins. So I you know, the division is over. I mean, the division's over. It's more the seeding among the top 4 teams and among the 4 division winners. It's staggering to think that we are really talking about that right now. But let's be honest, you know, disaster would really have to happen for the division to be in the balance. And it's more, you know, these other division winners and trying to stake their claim into the those top spots. It's amazing. It's still.
So you're ready to declare a winner 3 weeks into the season
of the division?
Yeah,
you're not. You're not, John.
I'd have to say that, you know.
Listen, have stranger things happen? Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not even gonna say yes.
Well,
maybe.
I only hesitate because, you know, nobody wishes injury. But I mean, if you have an injury,
that's the one, right?
You know, to you know who, and he will be unmentionable here because nobody wants to be the jinx, right? But if it happens, then all bets are off.
But that's the only injury where all bets are off.
Mm.
Really?
Okay, I'll give you that.
Who else?
You're right. That's the only thing that would cause you to think that it could be in jeopardy.
Right.
Yeah.
And trust me, I'm aware that it would be in jeopardy if the one you don't want to mention, if that happens.
The unmentionable.
Trust me, I'm aware of that. But I don't think these other three teams in the division are all that good, aside from what division they're in.
Okay.
I don't think that they're playoff teams anyways. So, you know, the fact that the Patriots already have this, you know, two-game edge on the Jets and three-game edge on the other teams,
right.
You know, and we'll still be playing them multiple times. And, you know, they have similar schedules. So any game that you think, well, it's going to be tough for the Patriots, it's going to be tough for these other teams because that's how divisions work. So, you know, I think I feel comfortable about the division right now.
All right, let's go back to the emails again. Webradio@patriots.com. We're asking you to find the dark lining and the otherwise silver cloud at the start of this season. In 2007, Shannon writes, the only weak spot of this year's Patriots comes to mind is in the kicking, punting game. The confidence level that the staff has in, as I believe she says, Gus to kick a Mileski.
Okay, whoa.
Yeah, I know. That's a little bit of okay.
That's
hey,
that's
what she says, yeah. It's obviously not too high, although he is great at kickoffs. And the punting game is completely average at best. The Bengals will get skinned this Monday night. 38-17 is what she says. Tell Ellis Hobbs, go Hawkeyes for me. The Iowa State Cyclones are a bunch of pig farmers wearing clown outfits.
Wow.
Shannon, has the last couple of weeks, has written in telling me to talk smack with Ellis, and I'm going to let Shannon do that himself.
Ellis would be up for it?
Yeah, probably would be, my guess.
Well, it's interesting that the punting situation, Belichick had some interesting comments on that yesterday because he was asked about, you know, what was perceived to be a poor performance by Chris Hansen. When we say performance, the Patriots punter has had only four opportunities all year, and I bet a lot of people don't even know who the punter is. That's a good thing if you're a fan of a team. But Belichick basically admit that the goal of the punting game the other day was to kick away from the Bills returners. Now, Terrence McGee was not in the game, but Roscoe Parrish and some of their other returners, the goal was stay away from them. Now, these punts by Hansen appear to be shanks, and I don't think they were very good punts, but the goal was keep it away from him, and if that meant it goes out of bounds, so be it. We'd rather it go out of bounds and be short than for it to be a good punt and go into Parrish's hands and him go 30 yards the other way or worse. So now,
they're probably not as concerned with the punting game right now as might be believed.
Exactly. That's what Belichick said. Now, could Belichick have maybe felt that it wasn't that good and he was just trying to protect his player right now? Yeah, I mean, maybe. I got to imagine that. I can't imagine that they feel very comfortable with their punting game. If they did, they wouldn't have made four moves or a lengthy series of moves between mid-August and the end of August with the punting game. Cutting Josh Miller, cutting Tom Malone, cutting Danny Bogger, signing Chris Hansen. You know, they started training camp with three punters, which is one or two more than probably any other team. They kept none of them and signed a guy on the day of the last preseason game who became their punter. That's unusual. That it doesn't mean it's a disaster, but it does mean that there's some question marks as to the long-term future of whoever is currently in that position. And my guess is there's a pretty good chance that Chris Hansen is not their punter all season long. Maybe he is, because maybe they do feel he's the best guy out there, but I'm just saying that what they've done over the – and really going back to last year when Josh Miller first got hurt, they haven't really been comfortable with who they've had in that position. So it's certainly a position to keep an eye on, but I think that the point was don't read too much into what Chris Hansen did on Sunday, because the goal was send it out of bounds. So we'll see.
Thomas writes – by the way, Thomas, I see your signature on your emails here, and it doesn't say where you're writing from. I'd really like to know where you're writing
from. Sure, a hometown, a state.
He says, did you get a marketing name yet? Obviously, yes, we selected and the fans voted on the firing squad for the offense last week. But he says, Pat's accelerating to Super Bowl, P-A-T-S. Package delivered on time. Accelerating Patriot Stampede. Mass impulse distribution. Suddenly pass frenzy. Action-packed Pats. Action-packed offense. Pats score again. Look out! Winners! Patriots super assail. Patriots sonic attack. Patriots harassment.
Wow.
Thomas has way too much time on his hands.
Another mouthful. Wow.
Tom not the same Thomas, writes, one issue that may arise occurs if all or most of the games by 10-plus points, then they lose the experience of staying calm and winning close games. If they get into a close game, staying mentally frosty is critical. That comes with immediate experience. I don't think this will be a problem because they've got enough veterans who went through the years of one close game after another. Here's hoping that institutional memory gets them through.
So now we're getting into that phase of, is it better
to lose? We've never won a close game.
Right. Is it better to, you know, go into the postseason? I know we're in late September. I really don't want to go in this direction. Is it better to go into the postseason with at least one loss, get that out of the way, get some close games? I mean, listen,
yikes.
Over the next 13 games, we're probably going to see a lot of all of that. Whether they win them all, lose them all, close games, blowouts, you're probably going to see a little bit of everything. So, yeah, I don't think we have to worry too much about let's get these close games out of the way. They'll come.
Peter in Northampton, Mass., two negatives for you. The Pats defense has not yet been able to stop opponents in the red zone. Yes, we've discussed this. It's very true. All three opponents have scored a touchdown every time they got into the red zone. He says, please stop smacking your lips or snapping your tongue against the roof of your mouth. I can't tell which it is. It makes a very disgusting sound. Am I doing that?
The lit tongue? What are we talking about here?
I have no idea. I don't have the slightest idea.
Whatever it is, can't be that noticeable, is it?
I don't think I do that.
I have no idea. I don't have the slightest
idea. It's just so ridiculous.
Peter,
it's
I would suggest that you clean the wax out of your ears.
So ridiculous.
Okay. Then I'll meet you halfway.
There you go.
And I'll stop doing this. How's that?
A lot of sound effects.
Julian from Socorro, New Mexico. I've actually been to Socorro, New Mexico. I want
Why?
You to know that.
Football, college football.
No.
No?
No, it wasn't for college football.
College
Vacation
hoops.
When I was younger.
Oh, yeah?
Much,
okay.
Much younger. It's been a long time. He says, Stephen Gostkowski is the X factor in a loss. Pats have had big games, but not him, and his reliability is a liability. If an opponent keeps it close in a critical game, I really can't trust him to knock it in like I trusted Vinatieri. I think that he's the weakest link and could lose a big game on his foot.
Well, I think there's some merit to that argument. He only has 1 year under his belt. It's not like we've got 10, 12 years of this guy's experience where, like it was with Vinatieri, you just had complete confidence. He struggled really since training camp began. And the interesting thing is they never, even with Vinatieri, you know, they always had, or not always, but they often had another kicker on board during training camp, at least to get some reps, at least to just kind of have that emergency backup, if anything, you know, or see if a guy could be that emergency backup. They really didn't with Gostkowski, and you wonder if, you know, I'm not saying he took it, you know, he had a lazy, you know, he just didn't have a if he was just lazy during training camp. I'm not saying that, but maybe there's a need for something to push this guy. I don't know. And, you know, he's only missed one kick so far this year. But, you know, the other day they didn't attempt a field goal when they were clearly in field goal range on fourth down. And you wonder, if they could rely on their kicker, would they go for the field goal here? I mean, that's definitely a question. I think we need to see a little more out of this guy before we pencil or you know, locks, you know, a lock in as a reliable kicker. I think we still need to see more, but you know, it might be one of their weakest links, and that's saying something again about the way this team is going. But
yeah.
I think that's valid. I think it's valid.
It's a valid point.
Yeah.
Valid point. Pat from Minnesota says, "Okay, we're nitpicking today, huh? Here's a couple of thoughts. At the moment, I'm not confident that if a game came down to a field goal at the end that was over 40 yards, that we would convert it." I know people will say the way we're scoring, it wouldn't be necessary, but when it gets to crunch time against good teams, it sure could be. All right, so there's another vote for the kicking game.
Yeah.
Lots of talk about the Pats going 16-0, but let's not forget we've always been about championships and not stats. How horrible would it be to go undefeated in the regular season but then not win the Super Bowl? Amen, brother.
Well, yeah, I mean, that there's no one who would take that trade-off. Yeah, let's go 16-0 and be the first one in whatever it is, 30-whatever years. Oh, but, you know, we're not going to get all the way to February. Yeah, I don't like that. Absolutely. I mean, if there was that choice, which we won't know that choice in advance, if the choice was 16-0 and out in first round versus 14-2 and you win the Super Bowl, of course, everyone's taking the Super Bowl, but you can't really make that choice as the season goes on. So, you know, we'll go one game at a time.
Right. Domingos in Alexandria, Virginia. Thanks for the Patriots fix, listening here in Redskins country. Besides the red zone defense, which doesn't worry me that much based on their history of doing well in that department, current personnel and soon-to-be returning personnel, I'd like to see Stallworth and Gaffney get open more and get a few more catches. Moss has 22, Welker 20, Watson 9, Stallworth and Gaffney have 4 each. Thanks for your great analysis. You're welcome. Okay, spread it around, in other words.
I think it'll come for Stallworth. I really, really do think that one of these games, defenses will put even more attention on Moss, and as long as Moss and Stallworth are on the field together, which they have been a little more and more, that Stallworth will get his opportunities. I really do. I think Gaffney is maybe not going to get as many, although he was, you know, he scored a touchdown in the red zone. I mean, that's, you know, that was the the game was only 17-7 at that point, and Gaffney was in there and catching a touchdown pass. I mean, that's pretty good. Now, granted, they both only have 4 catches this year, but I think they'll definitely come for Stallworth. I think Gaffney will still remain a part of this offense, not a huge part because he's their fourth receiver pretty much. But he's reliable. I think you got to keep on going with Moss and Welker as long as, you know, as being the top targets, you know, as long as they're playing the way they are. I think Welker is just a guy who's just going to consistently be there for, you know, 6, 7, 8 catches a game, 60, 70, 80 yards, because as long as any of those other guys are out there, Watson, Moss, Stallworth, he's going to be open underneath and over the middle. It's just going to happen. Mm-hmm. And he's got good enough hands. He's going to catch the ball. And we'll see it spread around a little more. I think 3 games is too little of a sampling, but we'll see.
Craig sends another note. Says the dark lining in a silver cloud being covered by a moron like Felger. He has always been a jerk, and I don't blame Matt Light for being critical of his questions last week during the break. Felger jumps on everybody for their mistakes in a very unforgiving and attacking tone. We heard the F word from him and one player, and he owes Light and Watson, the listeners, an apology for his lack of professionalism.
This ball that he threw had nothing to do with his sports, Hernery.
I didn't hear this, no.
Yeah, apparently his microphone was still on when they were going to a break locally for the radio station, and I guess they took offense at something he might have asked them. And the F-bomb broke out.
Really?
And
nah,
just carried over the internet. Is that what happened, Gary?
It's not the first time we've had an F-bomb over this show, so I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah, understood.
Well, it's... Yeah.
Let's make that clear. The F-bomb is not heard on this show yet.
No,
that I know
12
of.
To
no.
2 and just 12.
I know it stuck out. No. It's gotten on 12 to 2 because of Fred.
Right.
Fred's dropped
it. Loose cannon.
Right. Very loose cannon. But since he kind of runs the show...
He's talking about freaking Skype like it's the last... Excuse me.
That was Andy.
Was that Andy?
Wow. They're all.
Fred had one, too, didn't he?
Got to watch them all.
Didn't Fred have one? Yeah. Yeah, I think we had Fred have one, too.
Where's the gabagoo? And she's like, there's no gabagoo. He's like, there's no f***ing gabagoo.
Oh, emphatic. Is that a recent one?
Last year.
Last year, huh?
Craig says, team-wise, it's hard to find a weakness on this team. If we have one, it is more light gray than black. The weakest link of the 3 areas would have to be special teams, mostly the Ghost. He has proven to be a good kicker who is currently in a bit of a funk, which started in the preseason. It has not and hopefully will not be a determining factor in a close game. I'm not concerned at this point with our red zone D. It'll improve with the return of Harrison and Seymour. I don't think either of these situations will come into play into the Colts game. Being 16-0 would be awesome, but it won't mean anything if we don't win the Super Bowl. Thanks, Gary, for knowing me well enough to know what I meant on my prior email. I sense a love affair.
Yeah.
I sense a love affair. I think we need a little Whitney Houston going on here. That's what I think we need. Craig says, looking at the schedule, give me the one team we will play who you think has a defense good enough to shut down our offense.
Defense good enough to shut down the offense? Well I don't know if Miami is good enough to shut down our offense.
No, I think
but
have
they
to,
often do.
You'd have to consider a defense at full strength, too. I think it'd be, because you just don't know what will happen injury-wise. A full-strength defense. There you go. See? Craig, this is what Gary thinks about you.
That's really what he thinks about you. That's really what he thinks about you.
Funny stuff.
A Baltimore full-strength defense is still pretty good. I do think Miami's defense is pretty good and always generally plays the Patriots tough and gives Brady problems. So I think that's one to keep an eye on.
What about Baltimore?
No, Baltimore.
Oh,
I agree.
Both.
Yeah. Baltimore. What I was saying right there was Miami. Because they tend to, every year give some problems to the Patriots. But I'd say Baltimore. I think the jury's out a little bit on Pittsburgh. I know they're 3-0 and have looked really good in the process. but they played Cleveland, Buffalo, and San Francisco. They really haven't played, you know, some marquee teams. So I think the jury's still out a little bit on them.
Right, I agree with that.
But I think they have a pretty good defense. You know, none of them scare me too much, but I think there's a few that can give them a little more of a problem than, you know, what we've
Baltimore,
seen from Buffalo.
I think it's probably the best defense on paper at full strength that you'd have to say would stand a chance. Diane in Bridgeport, Connecticut. The Patriots lost to the Colts for many reasons, some they could not control, and under equal unbiased conditions, they would have won. But organized, well-trained new and third-string players can save the day when regular players, first and second string, are tired, as in the Colts game. I know there's still about 11 by 2, 22 on offense and 22 on defense. Some on the team don't get much playing time. So please give your thoughts on the coach using this very strong team to provide more playing time for new and less experienced players. What about, for instance, more second-half playing time for Matt Cassel?
Yeah, you know, valid points. I mean, I think, you know, we might see some of that, but not earlier than, you know, early mid-fourth quarter on some of these guys. And quarterback is just a completely – you got to put quarterback aside from everything else. I mean, you could put a guy like Lee Kevin Smith into the defensive line in the second half, and he's surrounded by Vince Wilfork and Ty Warren and still might have a couple of starting linebackers behind you, and you'd be okay. With quarterback, it's there's only one. You can only have one on the field at a time, and he's involved in every play. So, you know, you got to be careful about what you do there. So I think we might see a little more Matt Cassel, but not unlike what we've seen in past years. I mean, he'll come in a handful of games, blowouts, win or lose, and, you know, you see what he can do. And I don't think it'll be changed too much from what we've seen in the past, other than the fact that it seems like, or at least the pace they're going, they're going to have more blowouts than they've had in the past. So, you know, we'll see a little bit of Rashad Baker here, a little bit of, you know, maybe Wesley Britt there, and, you know, like I said, Lee Kevin Smith sprinkled in, Pierre Woods, those kinds of guys, and, you know, they'll still be surrounded by some of the starters. Quarterback's a different ball game though, and we'll see a little bit of Matt Cassel, but it won't be like we're up, you know, 24-0 at halftime and he's playing the entire second half. No, you're still going to see Brady in there at that time.
I think Thomas is becoming the new Craig. He sends us another email.
Is that a compliment, are you saying?
But Thomas, we still need to know, where the hell are you writing from?
Yeah.
Okay, we only asked you twice. How about giving us an answer? Let's see. He says, how about this jersey? He's been sending us some potential T-shirt ideas for, you know, what Jabari Greer had to say. I just got mossed on the play.
Oh, yeah.
So he sent us a Randy Moss jersey that says, you just got mossed. He's got green crud all over it.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
Nice job there, Thomas.
That phrase, I got mossed, I had heard it before. I wasn't sure exactly where, but maybe at the exact same time that Jabari Greer was saying that in one room off the hallway here at Gillette Stadium, Asante Samuel, for one, was saying the same thing a couple yards away when he was asked about what it's like to watch what Randy Moss is doing. He said, hey, when you're playing street ball as a kid, or, you know, it's just one of those, you know, a phrase that's out there is you got mossed when a receiver catches a ridiculous pass and makes a ridiculous catch, even if you're covering them well. It's called you got mossed.
Even if your name isn't Randy Moss.
Yeah, yeah. What a compliment.
Still got mossed.
Yeah, what a compliment that is. So, yeah. You know what I think it was? I think maybe Ellis Hobbs early in the offseason was talking about Randy Moss being acquired. And Hobbs' first game as a pro with the Patriots was the opener in 2005 against Moss and the Raiders. And Moss had at least one long touchdown. Maybe he even had two. And Hobbs was talking about getting mossed in that game. So, yeah, I mean, that's apparently, and I didn't really know this, but apparently it's a common phrase or within, you know, football circles. It's a common phrase, and a lot of guys on the Jets, Chargers, and Bills are, you know, had some nightmares about getting mossed, I think, in the last couple weeks.
Okay, we have our first stab at the sitcom.
Oh, that's
music,
right, yeah.
That was played at the beginning of the show, or beginning of the hour of the program here, which we like to do. We like to mix in a little fun on Tuesdays here. And Julian says, All in the Family. Turn that up a little bit, Gary. That's not All in the Family.
Hell no.
We'll see if anybody else can come up with it before all is said and done here. But thanks, Julian. Ah, the next emailer happens to get it. Jason and Ella says, What's happening? Remember Dwayne and Rerun?
Yeah. Hey, hey, hey. Come on.
Roger.
Yeah.
Good work.
Yeah. What's Happening is the name of the sitcom. Early 80s.
Yeah.
In fact, it was one of the few first sitcoms that had an all-black cast to it.
Yeah, I think it's still on. It's on TV Land or one of those.
Yeah, now that's without thinking about, what was the one with J.J., you know who I'm talking about. What the heck's the guy's last name? J.J., the big, tall, skinny actor who, thank you, Good Times.
Oh.
Hello.
Gary's quick, huh?
Yeah, he is quick.
Jimmy Walker.
Thank you, JJ.
Jimmy Walker.
Yeah, Good Times was the first, yeah. I think. But What's Happening wasn't too far behind that. So, in terms of the time frame, we're talking late 70s,
right.
Early 80s.
Yep.
So, all right, thank you for that one, Jason. In Dallas, you get the correct answer. Yeah, Mike in Tampa also chimes in with What's Happening TV show. Excellent job by you.
Now they all come in.
Now they're all coming in. No, I give him credit. That didn't come in after we mentioned it. Andy in Vermont. Well, Gostkowski has only missed one kick thus far in the regular season. I ask you, is that bad? And four punts in three games, how can you even evaluate that? And the running game is doing fine. They've averaged 4.3 yards a carry and just over 100 yards a game.
Running game's been great.
I don't really see any problem with that.
Running game has been, I mean, you got four guys playing their roles. Maybe the one thing that we're surprised about is the fact that, Maroney and Morris, Maroney's got 54 rushes, Morris has 33. Maybe it's a little surprising that it's been as balanced as it is. But I think that's a good thing, certainly in the long run. And then you got Faulk playing his role, Evans playing his role. The result has been, 4.3 yards per carry. They got three rushing touchdowns. That's working pretty well. That balance between the running game and passing game has been pretty good these first couple weeks.
Irene in Tampa, who says, John, I don't know if this is an issue, but if you're asking us to be nitpicking, the Pats are only 13 for 27 on third down conversions.
You know,
I don't know what the league average is or what this equates to in the big picture, but other than the kicking game, this is the only other subpar thing I could dig up. Overall, the Pats have made 80 first downs, so maybe it isn't that big of a deal. Well, first of all, Irene, 13 for 27 is outstanding.
Yeah.
That's not subpar.
No. That's,
if you're converting near 50% or at 50% of your third down conversions,
right,
you are outstanding. In fact, the general consensus is if you convert 40 or better, of third down conversions, 40%, you're doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, and a lot of it depends on are you looking at third and longs, third and shorts, or whatever. One of the interesting things from this past game was the Patriots were 0-for-3 on third down conversions in the first half, and they had a 10-point lead at halftime. They didn't convert a single third down, and yet they scored 17 points and were ahead by 10. And it was just interesting. It doesn't necessarily – I'm not sure what exactly it means. It probably mostly means that you're playing a bad team. But it was an interesting stat. And, part of it is you're getting those first downs on first and second down.
Right.
Or, you have, shorter field to work with. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say exactly what that means. But, the 13 to 27 is pretty good. They're going to get their third down conversions.
By the way, big football doings this week in Tampa. Maybe the biggest game ever played in the city of Tampa on Friday night. West Virginia at South Florida.
I was going to say, I could tell.
I will be
color.
There, in fact.
Really,
West Virginia. Irene, I'm going to be in your neck of the woods because I'll be doing the game for the ISP
there
Sports
you go.
Network.
Is that at the, not the,
at Ray J.
Ray J, I was there, there for the first time in the preseason. It's a pretty solid place. Hot. Down there, wow!
It's the first time in South Florida history that it looks like they're going to sell the game out. They have never sold that stadium out. They play in the home of the Buccaneers, which seats 65,000.
So that's where they play anyway.
They play there at Raymond James, and they have never sold out. Of course, the program is only 11 years old.
Right, and they're a pretty good
first
program.
Time they've ever been ranked. Right. First time they've ever been ranked. They're ranked 18th in the country.
And you're
this
playing
week.
West Virginia. You're
West
playing
Virginia.
An electrifying team like that. Right. Well, that's good.
It's big. It's going to be a big game.
It's a big one. Good. Look forward to hearing from
good
that.
Good football
you.
Stuff. Yeah. Josh in Jacksonville. Guys, I'm surprised that no one has said anything on Tuesday. But did you hear the interview that Felger had with Matt Light? Right after they were done with it. Yeah. Okay, we said all about that. He says, Gary, will you guys receive a fine from the FCC?
Oh, what'd you do?
No. No, we're not governed by the FCC. So, Josh, anyway, thank you. Yes, we did hear that. We spent a little time talking about it. And, hey, it's happened before. Undoubtedly, it'll happen again. Thomas says, sorry, guys, I'm originally from Lowell, Massachusetts, which explains why I have so much time on my hands, but I now reside in beautiful Virginia Beach, Virginia. Excellent. That's all we wanted to know. So he's writing us from Virginia Beach, Thomas, who sent us about 16 emails today. Not really 16, but I appreciate the input, Thomas. It's quite all right. You're always welcome to email. We're glad that you whittle away the time at work.
Right.
Listening to us and sending us notes.
You know, knocking Lowell. Did he have to knock Lowell?
He didn't have to knock Lowell. No. Oh, that wasn't right.
No,
right?
No.
I know. One more email to get to and then a little breaking news. Do we have any breaking news music?
You're going to be breaking it to me. I see Gary print something off and bring it to you, and it's press release-esque. And
breaking news.
My eyebrows are rising.
Okay. Clinton, James says, I do a lot of web design, have been doing it for years. Let me be the first to agree with what was said on the podcast today. The new website is a hot mess. Pretty to look at, but pretty bad when trying to actually use. What was said on the podcast? I missed that one, too. I guess we're talking about PFW in progress.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it looks great, but that's just me. I'm also somewhat electronically challenged at times, I find my way around
it. You do well on this.
Okay. Breaking news? You get it?
I get it.
I think this is a good idea, Gary, for breaking news the rest of the year.
Yeah.
People see everybody can understand, hey, that's the What's Happening theme song. What's happening around Gillette Stadium?
Right.
Patriots today have signed Antoine Spahn to the practice squad. Okay?
Woo!
They've released cornerback Jamara Williams from the practice squad.
Hunger stand.
They have placed tight end Jason Rader on the practice squad.
Woo-ee!
Reserve injured list.
Oh!
So he's gone for the year. It's on the IR.
That's a big one.
He was signed to the practice squad on September 3rd, Rader was. Now he's on IR.
So let me write this. So Spahn in.
Spahn is
Williams
in.
Williams out.
Is it Spahn or Spahn? I keep hearing the knuckleheads in AEI say Spahn. I think it's Spahn.
I've never had the opportunity
to call his name, so I don't know. Do we have a pronunciation guide in there?
We might, and even if we do, though, he might not be in here.
I think it is Spahn.
It's on page 3.
I'm going to say Spahn. So the Patriots signed Spahn to the practice squad. They released Jamara Williams from the squad, and they placed Jason Rader from the practice squad onto the IR.
Hey, something to shake things up leading into the Bengals game.
House cleaning today.
House cleaning.
All right, what about Patriots today?
Well, we're talking a little bit on today's show about some of the defensive notes from the other game, especially the way the Pats responded after Edwards had that that first drive for a touchdown. Hearing from Ellis Hobbs, he's never boring, Gary. Ellis Hobbs, never boring. If you thought that sack on the first series of the game was boring, Gary, you got to find something else to do, I'm telling you.
Boring.
And if you want the complete opposite of boring, Paul Perillo and I sit down and chat about the game.
Oh, no!
And, now this is truly exciting, Jarvis Green held a great event the other night, a wine tasting event for charity for his foundation. Also benefited Marquise Hill, I believe, for Marquise Hill and his family. And it was a wine tasting event. The aforementioned Christina Acker was there.
Boring.
And had a good time. And we bring that to you on today's show.
Very nice.
And
not boring.
Not boring will be 2 weeks from today when Christina Acker comes by, right?
Absolutely.
Not boring. Even Gary's going to admit that won't be boring. So,
because a week from today will actually be Patriots Monday following the Monday night game.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
How you doing?
That will not. Hey. Today's show will not be the worst video ever made.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
I promise you that.
That'll be 2 weeks from today.
How?
All right.
You. How doing?
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you. Thanks, B-Lo.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to wrap up today's program to let you listen in to Bill Belichick from Monday and catch some of the latest going on. Tomorrow's program, same Pats time, same Pats channel. I'm all choked up over leaving you today. But we will have interviews tomorrow. We'll hear they've got the conference calls tomorrow. No, they're probably Thursday this week, aren't they? Just because we're pushing everything back a day this week, I'll bet. All right, so we'll come up with some surprises for you tomorrow here inside the playbook. Here's Patriots head coach Bill Belichick.
Yesterday afternoon, last night's comments. It was a little bit of a different game in that, a few things happened there in the first quarter that kind of changed a little bit of our plan for the way we thought the game would go. And so I thought the players did a good job of making some adjustments, both offensively and defensively, kind of in what the emphasis was. And I thought they were heads up on the sideline and they did some things in the game that we really hadn't spent a lot of time going over in practice because, Buffalo kind of threw them at us and played us a little bit differently than what they'd been doing or maybe what we expected. So, that was good. We still got a lot of things we got to work on. Obviously, we made, enough plays to win. And I thought that we were, good in some phases of the game, could have been a little more consistent. We had a lot of negative runs in the in the running game, missed some scoring opportunities, you know, gave up another touchdown in the red area, you know, things like that that certainly could have been better. But, you know, in the end, like I said, made more plays than they did, and that's, you know, that's always the idea. But we need to, you know, correct the mistakes on this one, and then be ready to get on to Cincinnati and go out there and try to play, you know, try to play an error-free game. That's probably what it'll take. Well, we talked about him. We of course didn't expect him to play, but you know, I don't think there's very few quarterbacks that are, a couple come to mind, but there aren't a lot of quarterbacks that are more athletic than Losman. And so some of the things that he does, you know, affected us on the pass rush. But you know, I think that Edwards obviously has a good arm. You know, he made several good throws in the game, and you know, poised kid, guy we, you know, had a lot of respect for coming out, and you know, he's a talented guy. But I'd say we were a little bit less concerned about him scrambling than JP. That would probably be the big thing in the pass rush, but in terms of the throws he can make and the passing game and all that, not much. No, I just think the guys on the, you know, the particularly the outside rushers are, you know, against a guy like Losman, you really have to be concerned about him getting outside the pocket, throwing on the run, hitting balls down the field. You know, last year, I mean, they snapped one over his head. He picked it up and still got outside and hit a 20-yarder. You know, he had a couple scrambles on us. So, you know, just more concerned about his running ability and keeping him contained in the pocket than Edwards. But no, I don't think the passing game really affected it much. You know, I think I covered it after the game. I mean, it wasn't the best play I ever saw. It wasn't the worst one. You know, just try to make good decisions out there with the ball. It doesn't matter what, how you get it or where you get it. You need to make good decisions with it. Wasn't the best play I saw. It wasn't the worst play I've ever seen. Could have been a lot worse.
Comment on Russ Holstein filling in over there at right guard.
Yeah, you know, Russ, I thought our offensive line overall did a pretty solid job. You know, we they gave us a few problems, which like they always do, but I thought it was a pretty solid job. We ran the ball well, and we pass protected fairly well. The most part, and you know, Russ is a dependable guy for us. He's you know, been able to step in there both guard and center for us, you know, through the years. And you know, he's a smart guy. He works hard. He's tough. You know, he's been banged up a couple of times, but I think he's always come back well before, or come back as quickly as anybody, you know, has come back from, you know, a couple of the things he's had. So, you know, he's a tough kid, and he's out there, and he's dependable, and he works hard, and he's smart, and he's versatile. So, you know, he stepped in there and did it again, you know, kind of like Jarvis has done for us times on the other side of the line. You know, Russ is kind of like that too.
It's 2 weeks in a row that you've had a different play. Actually, 3 weeks in a row that you've had a different player in there. Do you take a small step back to look at the big picture and say, I'm pleased with the depth on the offensive line when you're able to do that?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Yeah. Anytime a player steps in there and plays well for you, you feel good about your depth at that position. And so it's always good. I mean, as much as you hate to see a player go out, it's encouraging to see another player step in and do a good job. It gives you more confidence in him and your depth at that position, you know, and the overall consistency you can maintain as a team, definitely. But, you know, you never want to see anybody go out, but that presents an opportunity for somebody else, and it's good when they can go in there and capitalize on it.
Are you pleased with the overall balance of your offense, run to pass, and what your running game has been able to do to complement the passing attack?
You know, I think we've had our moments. You know, at times it's been better than others, but, you know, it's competitive. I think people at least have to respect it. Got to respect our running game. Got to respect our passing game. You know, so things we can do better, we can execute them better. We can, you know, set up our system so that we can, you know, take advantage of things that the defense does. A couple situations where, you know, we didn't have great plays called that, you know, I think I could do a better job of just organizing it so that we have a, you know, better chance on those plays. But, you know, so there's, you know, I think there's something to work with there, and then there's a lot of things we can improve on. I mean, first of all, I think it needs to be an important, what you would consider an important play in the game. And then second of all, how good you feel about the call or, you know, what evidence you have to work with. I would say the more important the play, the less certain I would be about the evidence or view of the play. You know, sometimes you're just kind of hoping that you get a good view of it. The more sure you are of the replay, the more sure you are of the evidence that'll overturn the play, then I would say the less important the play would need to be. You know, it could be an incomplete pass on first down, or, you know, a catch that's ruled incomplete, you know, whatever it is. It could be a first down play or something like that. You know, you really got a good look at it. You really think that it was called incorrectly. Okay, then you throw it. You know, if it's a big play in the game, a scoring play like Brady's play, you know, the ball's down there on the 1 yard line, it turns over. It's, you know, it's a 7 point play. Even if we hadn't got it in, I mean, you think you can score from the one down there, so it's a 7 point play. Did we have a great look at it? Was I convinced that it wasn't a fumble? No, not really. But it was such an important play, and it was close, that, you know, you take a shot at it. So I think those things for me work in inverse proportions. But if, you know, if I get information from the coach's booth and they say, you know, hey, this guy definitely stepped out of bounds, there's no question about it, you know, then I'd be probably inclined to throw the flag, you know, even if the play wasn't, you know, that critical, you know, if it was 15-20 yard, you know, whatever it is. But if it was a really critical play, like the one in the end zone, you know, it's another scoring play. You know, was he out? It's close. I think the play was probably called correctly. But it's close, and it's a scoring play, and, you know, it's early in the game. You know, I thought it could have been a big play, so that's why I threw it. We have it organized so that the information flows smoothly. And I'd say I get good information from the booth. I have no problem with that. Like I said, sometimes it's the magnitude of the play more so than somebody saying, oh, this is absolutely the way it is. You know, they look at it and say, hey, it's close, can't get a good look at it, it's hard to tell. Team's coming out of the huddle, they're getting ready to run the next play. You know, you got to make a decision. Like I said, the more important the play is, the more likely I probably would be to throw it, regardless of how convincing the evidence was.
Bill, with 3 wins by pretty sizable margin coming in, you know, but do you ever allow yourself, when you're relaxing, to say, hey, you know, we have been pretty dominant for most of the season, not always, but for most of the season?
Well, I look at the things that I feel like we need to improve on and do better moving forward. I think that's what you do every week, win, lose, or draw. And that's... And that's what we need to do. You know, I think every team in this league's improving. It's early in the year. Every team's getting better. And that's what we need to do. I'm not too worried about last week. I'm more worried about next week. You know, I think a lot of times early in the season, people get skewed and they get a misinterpretation or a poor impression of the way things really are based on very little evidence. A lot of times it's just a matchup, or it's a certain situation that's, I would say, sometimes not ordinary. And so then everybody jumps to a conclusion that this is the way it is, or that's the way it is, and I personally don't think that's necessarily correct.